Vayhi bimei Ahasuerus. And it was in the days of Ahasuerus, who ruled from Hodu until Kush, 127 Medina.
I'll give you a little bit of the history. The destruction of the first temple, I'll give you the dates. In the year 440 BCE, we'll be speaking. Yirmiyah predicted the destruction of the temple. In the year 434, 6 years later, that was the first time that Yechoniah the Melech was exiled to Bavel together with Mordechai. 4 years later, Yirmiyah predicted the destruction of Bavel. In 423, then the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash came about. So you have Yirmiyah predicting two destructions 10 years apart. In the meantime, Bavel had taken over and finished destroying the Beis HaMikdash in the year of 423. Now, there were a number of kings. There were two dynasties at that time. There was the Babylonian dynasty, and Bavel is like Iraq. And then there was the Persian, which is like Iran. Now, Bavel was the major power at that time. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is the king that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar was succeeded by his son, who was Evil-Merodach. Now, Cyrus became afterwards the king of Persia, and Vashti was born. Now, after Evil-Merodach, about 20-some years later, Belshazzar became the king of Bavel. Now, Belshazzar made a big party in the year 372. Why? Because tradition was that for 70 years the Jews would be in exile. At the end of 70 years, they will reappear. They will ascend. So he counted 70 years from the conquest of King Yoyakim, and he celebrated. Why? Because Yoyakim was in 442. So in 442, that's when he exiled. So 70 years later, it seems everything was quiet. So therefore, Belshazzar finished. The Jews are finished. And he made this big party. That night, there was some handwriting on the wall. And Daniel was the one who interpreted the handwriting on the wall. Now, Belshazzar died. Now, when Belshazzar died, that was the end of Bavel, for all practical purposes. And Darius conquered Iraq, conquered Bavel. Then Darius died, and Cyrus, Kirish, became the king. And then Cyrus ordered the reconstruction of the temple. That was 70 years after Yirmiyah's prediction. Now, Ahasuerus became king, and he halted the construction of the temple a year later, after Cyrus had ordered the beginning. So now, Ahasuerus was a king for 3 years, and then he counted 70 years from the exile of the second king of Yechoniah. And he made a great feast, and that's when all of this happened with Vashti. Then Esther became the queen, which was the year 362. Then Darius II was a Jewish king, because he was born to Esther and Ahasuerus. And the year 353, Darius II gave orders for the rebuilding of the temple, and it turned out to be exactly 70 years. But it wasn't 70 years after Yoyakim, the first king, was exiled. Or it wasn't 70 years after the second king was exiled. It wasn't 70 years after the prediction of Yirmiyah. It was 70 years after the destruction of the temple. So that itself is a major lesson, that whenever you know something is going to happen, you don't know exactly when. Like in Mitzrayim, 400 years. We didn't know when you were going to count the 400 years. They thought it would be counting 400 years from when they were in Egypt. As it turned out, they counted 400 years from when Isaac was born. So when it happens, we will then know that it happened. The same is true with all the predictions and the prophecies of the future. When the true Mashiach will come, assume that there will be inspiration, that people will know that the Mashiach is there. There's a divine way of letting people know. So God knows, and when it comes, then we will know when these things will happen. And it was really proven in this chronology. Now, the reason I go through this chronology is because when you study the secular history, there's a big difference, and quite a bit of a difference in this. This is the Seder Hadar. Now, let's take this a little bit. Ahasuerus, he's always an interesting character. How did he start? Now, some say that Ahasuerus had nothing to do with royal blood. He was a usurper to the throne. He usurped it by force, and therefore he had a terrible inferiority complex. And that's normally how you learn. But there's an extremely interesting medrash that says that Ahasuerus did have royal blood, but at the same time, he was a very crude, uncouth individual. What is this medrash? The story says as follows. There was a Persian king, that's the first one that we mentioned. His name was Astyages, and he had a daughter, the only daughter. He had no sons. She became pregnant by her father's, one of his officers. He was infuriated and incensed, so he had the officer killed, and he threw his daughter into prison. Now, she had a child. When the child was born, so the king ordered that the child be abandoned on a mountaintop to die, which is common at that time. But Providence intervened. He was discovered by a large dog who allowed him to nurse that the child grew up in the mountains with the dogs, and he developed into a powerful warrior. Before long, he became the leader of a large band of men, and since he was raised by a dog, they gave him the name Cyrus. Kurush, because in ancient Persian, Kurush means a dog. So according to many, this was Cyrus. Now when he found out, this Astyages, that his grandson was alive and with robbers, so he sent an army, he sent men out to kill him. Cyrus was too strong, and then this robber band went to the capital. Cyrus killed his grandfather, Astyages, and he assumed the throne of Persia. That's when Cyrus the First became Persian king. At the same time, the Medes had a king whose name was Darius, Dariovich. Now, when he heard of the greatness of this Cyrus, the strength of overthrowing the Persian kingdom, who was the power at that time, he sent him a message that he wished to seal an alliance by having Cyrus marry his daughter. So according to this, Cyrus married his daughter. And from this union was born Ahasuerus. So he was the son of Cyrus, right? And the grandson from his father was the dog, yes, the Astyages, or the adopted parent, the dog. And Dariovich was his grandfather from his mother's side. So Ahasuerus was from the Persians and the Medes. Now when Cyrus's wife was also the only child, so when Darius died, Cyrus through his wife inherited the throne of 3 years later, Cyrus died, and their son Ahasuerus, he became the ruler of Chorus and Mada. That's one interpretation. Now the other interpretation was that he was a usurper and he married Vashti. Now who was this Vashti? What was the background of this Vashti? So Vashti came from the family of Nebuchadnezzar. Now here again, there's an interesting medrash that tells us about this. We mentioned before that Belshazzar, who was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, was Evel Merodach, and then Belshazzar. He celebrated the 70 years that he thought was the time of the building of the temple. And he made a great feast, and that night, appeared the handwriting on the wall, the famous book of Daniel. And on the wall it was written, Mini, Mini Tukalupasi, which in Persia, the Aramaic word meant, it was measured, measured, weighed, and divided. So when Belshazzar read this, he became very panicky. He was drunk from the party, but he was panicky. He didn't understand the writing, because it was written in Hebrew letters, but the words were of Aramaic. So finally, if you recall, we learned once in the book of Daniel, he summoned Daniel, and Daniel explained to him the meaning of the words, that he was found wanting. Now, the reason why it happened that night, because the idea was, the word said, measured, measured, weighed, and divided. Divided means that Belshazzar's kingdom would be divided and taken away from him. So Belshazzar was punished. Why? For this party. Because at this party, he made personal use of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. So when he understood what was going to happen, he collapsed in a faint. Now the story goes, the Medrash says, there was an old slave in the palace who had served in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Now he realized the truth of what Daniel said. So he said that Darius and Cyrus are going to come at that time and take the city. That means the grandfather and their son-in-law. So they'll kill Belshazzar, and I, as one of the slaves, will also die. So the best thing, he says, for me to do was to preempt this. Go ahead and kill Belshazzar, and then take the head of Belshazzar to bring it as an offering to Cyrus and Darius. He'll gratiate himself, and in that way, he won't be killed. So he killed Belshazzar in that night. That's what it says that Belshazzar was put to death. It was through this slave. That's one source. Another source in the Medrash was that when he heard about Daniel, he became very frightened. He had to protect himself. So he said that decree that anyone attempting to enter the palace would be killed. Even if the person claims that he's the king, you should kill him. Now he had to go outside to the bathroom. There were no bathrooms. He went outside. The guards didn't see him leave. So when he attempted to re-enter the palace, they stopped him and he said he was the king. But they didn't listen to that because the decree was that you have to kill anyone trying to re-enter. So they went ahead and he was killed in that way. Nobody blamed the guard or the slave for doing it because he'd been merely following orders. And then he informed them, the slave, following up, went to Darius and said that Belshazzar was killed. And they ordained that every member of the family, as their custom, had to be killed. So Darius and Cyrus and their people entered into the palace. Now Belshazzar had a young daughter, Vashti. And she grew up and she saw, when she woke up, she heard what's happening. So she rushed to Belshazzar's room and she thought that Darius was her father. So she threw herself at his feet. And when he saw this young girl, he had mercy on her. And he spared her life, Darius. And he brought her back to Persia, and he gave her to a wife, to Ahasuerus, the son of Cyrus. So this is according to this Cheshbon. Say that Vashti was 12 years old. Ahasuerus then married her when she was 18. He made a great feast in the third year of his reign, which was at that time, and that was to celebrate his marriage to her. So this is one aspect as to the background of who we're dealing with.
It's not commonly known, this Midrash. The source of the name of Ahasuerus, the name Ahasuerus is only in the Megillah. His true name was Artaxerxes. And Artaxa in Persian, it would be Artaxaca. We never pronounce Persian yet, any names after all. Now Artaxas is in Hebrew. So this was Artaxas, or it was a generic title that they used to call the Persian rulers, just as they called Pharaoh Pharaoh. So they called him also by that title. The Jews, however, gave him another name, and they called him Ahasuerus. Why did they give the name Ahasuerus? It was like the pun. It meant, in Hebrew, Chashresh, meaning he got a headache. They didn't know how to behave. He was very contradicting his reign, so they called him Ahasuerus. Some call also that some say that the name came from a different term. Ahasuerus is Ochiv, the brother, Shelrosh, of the head. What does it mean, the brother of the head? The head in question here was Nebuchadnezzar, who was Bavel, who was destroyed by Persia. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was known as the biggest Russia that there was, as the head in cruelty. So they said that just as Nebuchadnezzar was the head in cruelty, Ahasuerus was also as cruel. He was like the brother of the head. Now, according to that, they say that they had both been born under the sign of Mars. And Mars is always a sign of bloodthirsty. So therefore, he was Achiv Shel Reich. Like Stalin, you could say, well, it was Achiv Shel Hitler. They're both the same in Israel. So he, although Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple and everything, perhaps Ahasuerus wasn't that open, but Ahasuerus was considered Achiv Shel Reich. Now, when he found out that they called him that name, so they were afraid, what are they going to tell him? So they made a different meaning to that name. They told him that the word Achash means in Aramaic, it's true, that Achash means leader. And the word for leader in Hebrew is Reish. So they said that Achash Vayreish means the Aramaic and the Hebrew term for leader. Achash, leader in Aramaic, Verosh, and leader in Hebrew. That was able to assuage and to quiet him down. Now, the reason, the Medrash brings down, the reason why they had to suffer by Ahasuerus, they were placed under him, because like we see already that the Nehemiah describes how they behaved in Golis there, that they didn't keep the Shabbos. So therefore, because of that, as a punishment, Hashem gave Ahasuerus more power than he deserved. And he was given dominion over the whole world, over the entire civilized world. But actually, we say he was the king over 127 kingdoms. Originally, he was the king over 252 nations. He had crushed the entire world. Before long, they rebelled from him, and he threw off half, he lost half of his kingdom, and he remained a little more than half, was like 127. So 127 is a little more than half of 252. So he remained like with a drop more. Now the reason why he received this punishment is because he denigrated the rule of Hashem, because he described him as the God of the Jews, whose habitation is in Yerushalayim, assuming that the God of the Jews, again like Pharaoh, was only the God of the Jews, not the God of the universe. And also, he stopped the building of the Beis HaMikdash, because the building of the Beis HaMikdash had begun. His grandfather, Dariovish, and his father, Cyrus, permitted the building of the Beis HaMikdash.
In the year 370, that was just before he died, Cyrus, who was the son of the dog who suckled him. So he permitted the Jews to start building the temple, but we do know that one of Haman's sons, the Medrash tells us, was amongst those, in the book of Ezra, it speaks of those people who stopped the Jews from building the temple. They wrote a letter to Ahasuerus as soon as he became king, and they wrote, if the Jews are allowed to rebuild, I'm quoting a paragraph of the letter, the walls of Jerusalem, a great rebellion will take place. Because you know how impregnable the walls of Jerusalem were. Nebuchadnezzar could take the city after a long siege. So under no circumstances don't allow the Jews to rebuild the walls. If they do, they'll rebel, they won't pay taxes. And the reason why we're doing this is because it's altruistic. Because we love the king and we don't want to see him suffer any great losses. So we advise that the permission to rebuild Jerusalem should be withdrawn. Now, obviously, he didn't love the Jews too much anyway, so he went ahead and he accepted it. Ahasuerus accepted this, urged him, and he stopped the rebuilding of the temple. Now, amongst those that in the book of Ezra, who are described as the initiators or the instigators in communicating this to Ahasuerus, we find one of Haman's sons. It was there was Sanballat, Tobiah, and Shimshai. And Shimshai was known to be a son of Haman. So again, you see developing the animosity, the hatred that Haman had for the Jews.
Now, when it says also, U Ahasuerus, what is the emphasis in the first passage? He is Ahasuerus. So Rashi says, he is Ahasuerus, meaning that he was a great Russia. Ahasuerus was a Russia from the beginning to the end. Yet, it says that his Rishus was not mentioned directly in the Megillah, because the people would not have accepted it. The other nations, you know, they would have stood up for Ahasuerus. So therefore, they didn't write the Rishus in the Megillah outwardly, but by pointing out who Ahasuerus, he is Ahasuerus.
Now, continuing on, we find in the beginning of the story, it says in verse 2, Beyomim ahein, Kisheves HaMelech Ahasuerus, Al Kisei Malchuso, Asher B'Shushan Habiro. Which means that in these days, King Ahasuerus had sat on his royal throne in Shushan. Now, Ahasuerus, we said, also had mistaken the 70 years, and therefore he made this great party, because he figured that now I'm safe, because his kingdom, he thought, was secure. Kisheves HaMelech Ahasuerus, when as the king sat, meaning the king felt that there won't be this, how do they use the expression, this cancer in our midst. He ruled over 127 Medinos. He wouldn't have any Jerusalem back there, and it would remain 70 years past, and somehow the Jews, God had abandoned Israel. So he went ahead and he sat on his throne and he assumed the title of king. But really, it wasn't that he sat on his throne. He thought that he sat on his throne. But you have a kof, which in Hebrew means kisheves. Kisheves is also as he was sitting, or as if he sat on his throne.
Some note that he's called Ahasuerus, not the king Ahasuerus, because he ruled, but he was very concerned, because we knew that the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt, and he was afraid that God would bring the Jewish people back to Israel, because that was the prophecy that was said, that in 70 years they will return, and according to his count, this was only 67 years, so he waited the first 3 years with great trepidation. Indeed, will he be the ruler, the world ruler? So at the third year, however, verse 2, it says, Bayomi Mohaim, in those days, Kisheves HaMelech Ahasuerus, Al Kisei Malchusa. When the 3 years passed, it was already HaMelech Ahasuerus. He felt more secure in his throne.
Now, once it reads, Vayibi Meh Ahasuerus, and he was the king who ruled from Hodu Ve'at Kush, from Hodu Ve'at Kush, May of Asher Meshem, 127 Medinos. Now the Chazal stop and they ask, they say, whenever we find the expression, Vayibi Meh, we always say that it has bad news. It's speaking about a bad Sora. Vayhi bimei, whenever it says Vayhi bimei, it means it's Sora. Like it says Vayhi in the beginning of Shoftim, it says Vayhi bimei shvot ha-shoftim. It wasn't the day of the judges. Vayhi rov bo'aretz, there was hunger. So whenever you see Vayhi bimei, it's like saying, oh, hitting back. What was so bad? There's no Sora. It doesn't say immediately like it was hunger. It is. It just says Vayhi bimei ha-chashverish. Who Achashverosh Hamolach Mehodu VeAtkush Sheva VeYesrim UMeya Medina. So what's so bad about that? That the ruler of under, what does that negate? What does that involve us? So the answer that they say is the following: we find the Gemara says that Hashem treated us with compassion. Why? Spread us among many rulers, among many nations. So that means that one king shouldn't have the power to compel or to destroy the Jews. The Jews are spread throughout. There will always be another part of the Jewish nation that can escape. Now, we saw during our lifetime that with the Germany, as much as they had a part of the world, but there was a part of the Sephardic world that they didn't have. In America, they didn't have. But if Louis Yitzhak Chas V'Sholem, he would rule the whole world, so he would be able to do whatever he wanted with the Jewish people. So this is what the Pasuk says, Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. It's a tzoret when Achashverosh was a ruler. Why? Because he was the Achashverosh who ruled over Hodu ve'Atkush, 127 Medinas. And he had total dominion. He had nobody to be afraid of and nobody to be concerned of. So he could have done whatever he wanted with Klal Yisrael, who were subjects of his in this part of the world, which was the greatest part, almost the entire civilized world at that time. So that's the meaning of Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. That fact that Achashverosh had this authority, this dominion, over 127 Medinas, that augur is bad. It's an ominous sign for Klal Yisrael, because the chance of danger, of destruction, would be that much greater. Now, in Pasuk Dalet, it says there were 127 Medinas. The Medrash tells us that he ruled over 100 Medinas in the Yabosha, and there were 27 islands. 27 islands and 100 countries and terra firma and dry land and continents. So now, how do they get that? Where does the Medrash get that from? So the Goyim, who always finds the source in the Pasuk, says that this is alluded to in the end of the Megillah. Because in the final sentences of the Megillah, it says there that HaMelech HaChashverosh made, after the miracle of the Megillah, it reads there in verse 1, Vayosam HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas Al Ha'oretz. King HaChashverosh levied Mas, taxes on the land. 10:1, the Yiei Ayom and on the island. So the Groth, the Goyen, says the following. The word mas al ha'oretz. What is mas in the geometry? The numerical equivalent of mas is mem, which we know is 40. Nun is 50. Samach is 60. So mem and samach is 40 and 60, which means 100. So like mas al ha'oretz alludes to like 100 Oretz, countries on land. Now, Iye Hayom, Ve'iye, it says. Ve'iye, Vav is 6, Aleph is 1, and 2 Yuds are 20. So you have Iye Hayom, Ve'iye Hayom, 27. So he says that's how the Medrash was able to find the source that there were 100 Oretz and 27 islands. From this pasuk at the end of the Megillah. Count up the numbers, you see the numbers there.
Beyamim Hohen, Kisheves HaMelech HaChashverosh Al Kisei Malchuso. On his share, Asher B'Shushan Habira. Now this is a very interesting chair that they were talking about. What was the chair that HaChashverosh was sitting on? We know that Shlomo HaMelech had his famous throne, which they built with all types of Kabbalistic secret. Everybody wanted this throne. In fact, there are different interpretations as to what happened to the throne, but according to the Goyim, the Vilna Goyim, So it seems that when Paro captured this throne, and when he brought it to Egypt, and he tried going on this throne, so the Ari, the lion, hit him, and he fell off of the throne, and he crippled them. After that, nobody had the chutzpah, as they say, to go up in this throne. In fact, some allude to that when we say the pasuk, Al Kisei Le'yeshev Zor. On his chair, a stranger will not sit. But they all wanted this throne. Some said that Nebuchadnezzar ended up with the throne. So when Ahasuerus, who was really a commoner, Ahasuerus was not the son of a king. He wasn't really from royal. The Gros interpretation of Vilna Gaon. He became a king through marriage. And he wanted to show everybody that he's a king. So he made a facsimile. He made a chair which would be to all the specifications of Shlomo's. Of course, it was lacking the mystical input that Shlomo's had in order for the lions to become alive. But outside, it looked the same, but it didn't have the kavanos, the intents. So the only place where he could find people who would be able to build this was in the city of Shushan. Now, Shushan at that time was a little city in Iran, right? It's Shushan in Persia. Now, once they finished the Kisei for 3 years, according to it took them to build this throne. Once they finished the throne, they tried to take to the palace. Couldn't move. It was that great. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in a Ruach Shtus that into him. What did he do? He took the throne. He said, well, if Muhammad, you know, if the mountain won't come, you go to the mountain. He couldn't go to him, so he decided he'll move the kingdom or the capital of the kingdom to Shushan in order to sit on this throne, which is in Shushan. So now, why did he do all of this? Why did all of this happen? Because of Mordechai. Mordechai at that time was in Shushan, happened to be living in Shushan. Ish Yehudi, it says later in the verse, Hoya b'Shushan. Hoya b'Shushan. It wasn't that he came to Shushan because it was the capital. But he was in a small town. He lived in Shushan when he came there. So now the kingdom came to Mordechai. In a sense, it came to the throne, but Hashem made it that it came to Mordechai. So that's what the Gaon says, Beyomim Hohem, the emphasis on Beyomim Hohem in those days, Kisheves HaMelech HaChashveresh Al Kisei Malchuso Asher B'Shushan Abira. The whole thrust seems to be leading towards Kisei Malchuso, because that brought him to the city of Shushan. Kisheves HaMelech, it continues, when he continued, he made this big party for all the people. Why did he make the party for all the people? So it showed that he wanted to gain favor from everybody. He wanted to gain favor from everybody. Yet, the wonder here was that for the Malka, which normally, if he didn't want to upset everybody, so what would he go ahead and kill Vashti? So this itself was a mishigas by him. Because why did he start up with Vashti if his whole idea was to solidify the kingdom and to bring in feelings of goodwill? And so they bring down that this itself was a miracle. And he points out that there were some that would try to minimize the miracle with Esther later by arguing that Esther was in a position to speak up for her people. So it's not because Hashem made it that way, but she was in this unique position. So therefore, you see from the story that this unique position didn't help Ahasuerus' first wife. Haman was close enough to the king to have Vashti killed. So you see really that it's not done with Seichel. There is no way with the plot that you could politically flap the events that occurred, because things happened out of control. Like the Chazal say that Ahasuerus killed his wife because of his friend, meaning he killed Vashti because of Haman, who was his friend and gave him this close advice. And later he ended up killing his friend because of his wife. And he killed Haman because of Esther. So it's really ironic, but it's like they say, it's not just without any reason, but it happened to have direct divine intervention. And that's although Hashem's name does not appear in the Megillah. Why doesn't it appear in the Megillah? Primarily for that purpose, to show that the events that happened could always say, it's ironic that it happened, it's miraculous, but it's not really God appearing in the Megillah.
In order to gain favor, he went ahead and he invited them to a great mishta, correct, a great party. Now the purpose of this mishta, after the third year that he ascended the throne, was to show everybody the wealth that he has. So he went ahead for the partumim, the sarimatinas, the entire his entire empire to show them all the wealth that he had. But it's not the idea just to come see how wealthy I am. So he went ahead and he invited them to a great mishta, correct, a great party. And when they felt close, so he went with them to show them some of his wealth. Once he felt a little closer to them, you don't just call in strangers and show them your wealth, because they'll look at you like you're crazy. But once you have a party, and they became a little closer, so then he could go ahead and uncover this wealth. So now, that's what the Chazal say, that every day, the Medrash says, he showed them six vessels. Now, how do they know that from? Because in this pasuk it says the following: Osher, Kavod, Malchusai, right? Osher is one, Kavod is two, Malchus is three, Yekor is four, Tiferes is five, Gedula is six. So now there were six items corresponding to each one of these words that he showed them every day. Now, if we say you have to show them 1,080 items, that's the amount of treasures that they say Nebuchadnezzar hid. If you divide 6 into 1,080, it comes out 180. So that's what the Gros says. The party took place here. It said, why 180? Because he showed them 6 each day, and he wanted to show them his entire treasures. And 6 times 180 comes out to 1,080. So that's why there's the source for 1,080 treasures that we find in a different medrash interprets this pasuk, why the party went on for 180 days. That's also an interpretation of the Vilna Gaon.
Now, just a few words about this feast, this great feast that Ahasuerus made. And he invited all of the Jews that were in Shushan. So it says there in verse 5 in chapter 1, Ve'ashtiya kados ein ones, kichein yusad hamelech la'aseis kirtzein ish ve'ish. That means that nobody forced the people at all to drink. There was no compulsion, for this was the decree of the king, la'aseis kirtzein ish ve'ish, to do whatever each individual wants. Now, this was something which was out of the ordinary, the Gra points out, because normally, if you were offered hospitality in these countries, I don't know how it is today, but probably the same, and if you don't partake of the hospitality, so if you leave over something, you're in bad shape. So you have to eat and drink everything. And then they had the famous wine cup that would be, I think, a few quarts, and they offered it to you to drink, and you had to drink the whole thing, as they say, and people used to fall over. You ever seen the great, big, large wine cups? We have one for Kiddush Cup in University Boulevard. If you'll take a look at that, you'll get an idea. It almost takes a half a bottle of wine in the people. But here they decided, we won't do that. If a person wants a little bit, Vashtiya Kedos, Ein Enes. Nobody is going to be forced. All right? That means if you ask for a little thimble of you, that's what you'll get. So he wanted to show how he's a man of the masses, that he's not concerned for the old traditions, but he's willing really to change. So here we see, the Gros says, how, like I said earlier, he wants to please everybody, yet he turns around with his wife Vashti and acts so cruel against her at a time like this. But also when they say, La'aseis kirtzein ish ve'ish, some say that there was like a choice here between Mordecai, it says Mordecai and Haman. Kirtzein ish ve'ish were both, ish ve'ish means every man, but the Medrash says, in the Gemara actually, that one ish refers to Haman and one ish refers to Mordecai, because we find Haman described as the ish tzor ve'oyev, this great enemy, and Mordecai is described in the Megillah as ish Yehudi, hoya b'shushan, this Jewish person in Shushan. So it said both of them, Mordecai and Haman, had different intents why they didn't want to, they were very happy that they weren't being forced to drink. Mordecai was happy because now the Jews won't have to drink. They're not forced to drink, they don't have to drink. Haman was happy because they will drink, and if they'll drink, they're drinking of their own accord. So it's not like they're being forced in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, but they're drinking willingly. And drinking willingly, so therefore the punishment will be that much greater. In the time of Nebuchadnezzar, there was no question they were forced. I always give you the muscle about the fellow traveling on the train out west, and they were going to give him some Western hospitality. So they offered him a ham sandwich, and he refused. He said, it's against my religion. Then he took out some wine, and he offered him. So again he refused. Now here he took a front. So he took a gun. He says, you're refusing my hospitality. You better drink this wine. So he says, well, since you got the gun out there, could I have the sandwich too? So the idea is, the sandwich, that already, there was really no excuse. So that's what Haman wanted.
It's one of the reasons, as an aside, one of the reasons given for Shalach Monos. It says, Shalach Monos ish l're'eyu. And we know, to send a present, what kind of present does it have to be? Food that can be eaten. That's the only way. To be readily eaten. That's how you're mekayim the mitzvah of Shalach Monos. So there's one interpretation, the origin of that mitzvah was the following. Since most of the Jews were forced, and they willingly ate dreifus there, so therefore it can breed disharmony, and one person wouldn't trust the other person in kashrus anymore, because you see he ate at the suit of Ahasuerus. So therefore, to celebrate it, each person sent to the other person food, and they ate from each other's food to show that they believed in each other's reliability of kashrus, and it was only like that they were forced to do that. All right, that was one of the reasons that were given at that time, one of the interpretations.